This is a free download from the BBC. For more information and our terms of use, go to bbc.co.uk/radio3.
Hello. Today's programme is dedicated to the life and career of a man whose flame burned brilliantly but briefly, David Munro. It's utterly remarkable, when you consider his recording output alone, to realise that he achieved so much in a career that lasted just over 10 years. Munro's meticulously shaped concert formats had at their core a desire to entertain and inform, and were delivered with considerable musicianship from all the members of his Early Music Consort of London. The concerts were go-to events and were extremely popular, often interspersed with examples of his quick wit and considerable knowledge. David Munro died on May 15, 1976, at the age of just 33, 2 days after my 12th birthday. I had then only vaguely heard of him and his work, but it was in that year that I had my first awakening to the endlessly fascinating world of early music, one in which I've been immersed ever since. As soon as I heard his exuberant arrangements and performances on recorders, crumhorns, shawms, dulcians, bagpipes, rackets, cornemuse, sawdunes, douceins, and goodness knows what else, I was hooked and craved more of this rich diet of pungent sounds and strange familiar musics. Much of my early schooling in this repertoire was learnt not from scores, rather by ear, from the recordings of the Early Music Consort of London and the brilliance of Munro's own playing style, as you can hear in the Saltarello from 14th century Italy. In the late 1960s, this burgeoning world of early music was embraced by the parallel flowering of the English folk revival. David Munro was ideally placed to embrace both readily, given his love of traditional music from around the world and his attempts to include elements of all musical cultures and styles into the recreation of music from the Middle Ages in particular. In that first Saltarello you just heard, his florid shawm playing is more or less 40% original manuscript notation, with the remaining 60% being his added flamboyant decoration and a driving percussion and trumpet drone. Before Munro arrived on the scene, the world of early music was a terribly polite affair. What he and his contemporaries did was to lift off the shelf many pieces unheard by more than a select handful of initiates, music that existed skeletally on the page, but which acquired flesh, feature, and character when brought back to concert life.
Oh,
I love the way the voices and Shaum share similar timbres in those first two pieces, Allez Salite and Amor Potest. In that third song, Zelus Familiae, the three voices blend beautifully. In this next example of his approach, Munro encourages a rhythmic and vocally honest a cappella performance in the Viderunt Omnes by the Notre Dame composer Perrotin. What struck me then and still does is the distinctly forthright purity of the vocal delivery, accurate, clear, and precise. All the ends of the earth have seen the salvation of our God, the Viderunt Omnes, by the 12th century composer Perrotin, sung by the distinct voices of Martin Hill, Geoffrey Shaw, Paul Elliott, John Potter, and Rogers Covey Crump. David Munro recorded several discs of earlier medieval repertoire, but in his next tranche of work looked towards the Renaissance, and in particular the instrumental delights of dance music for court and city. These recordings, the Praetorius Dances and Motets, and the two Renaissance dance bands, were unique in that they presented this marvellous repertoire in an almost symphonic format, kind of like a big band in a Renaissance style. I first encountered the splendour of his recordings of the dances from Cesato's Danserie, which were reimagined in this way, and I found the rush of adrenaline to be completely addictive. On the Triumphs of Maximilian recording, Munro turned his attention to the robust beauty of German court music of the early 16th century. This repertoire suited perfectly, to my mind, his delight in contrapuntal music that combined reeds, brass and voices. When I bought my first Shaum at the age of 14, followed by all the rest of the reed menagerie over the next few years, it was these recordings that were my inspiration, and I've never lost the thrill of the sheer radiance in these performances. The world of historical performance is curious and exceptional in that because the revival of early music was perforce motivated originally from an antiquarian and academic perspective, when musicians and singers began to perform the findings and transcriptions of musicologists, a degree of tension entered into the proceedings. What David Munro realised very early on is that when it comes to the performance of medieval and early Renaissance music, when so much relies upon educated guesses at best, there can be wildly differing interpretations of the same pieces which can lead to dispute. As he himself said in a Gramophone magazine interview in 1974, "My only dictum is that there are no golden rules, and we'd be much better off if there were fewer axes being ground." Latterly, also during his lifetime, Munro was sniffily criticised for drawing his repertoire from anthologies as opposed to primary source material and not being thorough in his research. When my own ensemble, the Dufay Collective, was formed in 1987, the driving force was a desire to create our own style, true as possible to the findings of academic research, but always allowing the fact that we were living and working in a wildly different age to be present. Our concerts and recordings made the ensemble popular, and the programming ethos was very much influenced by that of Munro: variety, information, and going out with a bang. I remember as a 14-year-old sitting in front of the TV with a tape recorder sometime in 1978, early on Sunday mornings, when David Munro's programme on medieval and Renaissance instruments was rerun. We didn't have a video recorder, so I taped the audio onto cassette and listened back again and again to the programmes. Later, I travelled on the bus from Padstow to Plymouth with my three mates to go record shopping at the huge HMV store there. In those days, we were all into ska and punk, but in the store, I snuck off to the classical music section and bought several early music consort of London records, delighted that one of them was the double LP set, complete with book, Instruments of the Middle Ages and Renaissance. Listening back again, there are some great, great performances. Listen to this variety of tracks from that recording, featuring various reed instruments, including, firstly, a pair of quarante performed on a Shawn band consisting entirely of Munro himself, multitracking all the parts. What a marvellously incessant honking that was. David Munro's palpable drive and ambition thrust him into the limelight and a very public forum at a youthful age, in which trial, error and success were apparent in equal measure. Yet, to my mind, he doesn't appear to have been ever setting out his stall for absolute authenticity, having more the air of an explorer eager to display the treasures he has found to all. To be honest, it's completely impossible to be authentic in terms of the recreation of musical sounds of the past, and anyone who suggests otherwise is not only fooling themselves, but their audiences as well. Luckily, that term authenticity is rarely heard nowadays, being replaced by the better suited, if rather cumbersome, historically informed performance. This is more accurate, though. We can only be informed about the music we wish to play from our own findings and those of others. As practitioners, we interpret the often arcane pomposity of methods and treatises from the Middle Ages right through to the Romantic period. We become wound up with matters of string materials, blow hot and cold over wind instrument technique, and pick holes in trumpet-making issues. We are insulted by the slur, and the true nature of a division divides us. But I like to think of what I and my fellow early musicians do as being rather like the way a dilapidated and forgotten old master is carefully restored by experts. As they clean off centuries of muck and clarify the image, so we try to strip away the aural grime of passing time to reveal the beauty of the original work. What Munro had was an ability to wear his knowledge and multi-instrumentalist virtuosity lightly and present memorable concerts. His legacy, more than any other, was to inject the life back into the music he recorded and performed, inspiring a generation of musicians to explore music that could be as alive now as when it was first heard in the courts, halls and streets of medieval and Renaissance Europe.